Very short. Brother Steve.
Brother Steve.
What voice?
Depending on if you know where you go, you can have really long.
Trends aren't really marked.
Yeah.
You just go up.
There's actually two trails that go up. One goes up and one goes down. Or...
I think all trails
are
good.
So, question for you guys. Jennifer and I are going to keep the festivals. We're going to keep Passover, unleavened bread, and first fruits this year. So what I'd like to do is ask you, if you were to join us in doing that, what would it mean? How would you honor that festival? And when would you do it? What would you do? And how does it work? So first question, when is Passover going to be this year?
We don't know.
Good answer.
We can get pretty close though.
True.
Well, there's a website you can go to, and it gives dates, but they may not be accurate.
Sure. And how can they be off? In what way could they be off?
Well, when the harvest is done, when the full moon is visible in a certain part of the world.
So there's two constraints. Number one is, will the barley crop in Judea be ripe in approximately first of March? Now, God has said that the seasons aren't going to change. So it's likely that barley harvest is always going to be at approximately the same time each year. For that reason, we can be fairly certain, also because the previous year was a 13-month year, that this year will be a 12-month year. Therefore, it is extremely likely that the new year will be on approximately March 1st, give or take a day. So, Mike is correct. We're not certain exactly when it will be, but we have got a pretty good idea that the first of the Jewish year, the biblical year, will be around March 1st. Or will it be close to March 15th? Maybe about March 15th. Or will it be? When is the new moon happening each month?
It's pretty much in the middle. I mean, it's pretty much exactly opposite of the Gregorian calendar.
So it is close to that. So the new moon for this month of January was when?
A couple days ago,
we had a new moon. It was on Thursday with our new moon. So that means that the new moon is retrograding approximately 1 to 2 days each month. So that means by March 1st, we're going to be close to somewhere around the 10th of March will be the new moon. Therefore, we know that approximately March 10th-ish, somewhere in that vicinity, give or take a bit, we will have perhaps a new moon. How many days after the new moon is Passover? 14th day of the new, after the new moon is Passover. And since I know some of us have been studying the definition of twilight, when does Passover start? It starts at twilight on the 14th day. So, I've been talking with a bunch of Jews, and I found out how they define twilight. The
This will be new for some of us, most of us. The word twilight, Ben Miriam, Ha Ben Miriam, something like that, is between the evenings. So therefore, sometime in the afternoon is the way the Jews have been interpreting that for thousands of years. So, in the afternoon of the 14th day,
would you understand?
I know that's it. Now, it wouldn't be March 10th. It would be the after the new year begins, after the new moon begins. So keep in mind, the new moon does not match our number. So throw in there an extra couple weeks. Effectively, what we can do is we can take a look, and during the last week of March, we'll be passing. Give or take a day. Mm-hmm.
The last weekend?
Week.
Last week.
Week.
Correct. So, last week of March, Passover, and then Unleavened Bread. How should I celebrate it? How should I worship God? How should I honor Him? What would I do with
it? Can I ask you a question?
Of course. That's why we're here.
So, the celebration of the Passover, Unleavened Bread, was that also the time when they were leaving Egypt, didn't they have to butcher a lamb and roast the flesh over fire and eat it?
Yes.
Standing up. So are you into the lamb thing too?
So, should I do the lamb thing? Is it necessary to kill myself a 1-year-old unblemished male lamb or goat and roast him over a fire and have him eaten before dawn? Is that part of what I need to do if I'm going to honor Passover properly?
I think before the cross, but after the cross, Christ was the sacrifice. I'd say no.
So Mike is saying that before the cross, yes, I needed to kill the lamb, and after the cross, Christ himself became the lamb and replaced the lamb part of it. I agree with Mike, but the question also then becomes, if we replace that part of it, do we replace all of it? Do we no longer need to keep Passover? Do we no longer need to observe the day? Because Jesus has already died and therefore fulfilled the best of it.
Well, if they did it away with the entire sacrificial system in the Jewish system, it seems like we might be jettison some of the particulars
about the Passover. Talk to the elves so they can hear it.
Oh. If when Christ died, you know, the Christian church did away completely with the sacrificial system, wouldn't it follow that you could, what should I say, streamline, minimize the celebrations like the Passover and not be in danger of not
doing the right thing? So let's go and ask this question then. What was the purpose of the Passover?
About Sam. Yeah, Passover is the symbolism for coming out of sin and slavery.
Same thing as this, right?
Yeah. So that's where our celebration should be focused, is coming out of sin and slavery, the act of repentance.
Agreed. Thanks.
Isn't that also communion?
Isn't Passover the same as communion?
Isn't celebration of coming out of sin also communion and being saved?
Jesus said at the Last Supper, do this in remembrance of me. Remember that I have a broken body on your behalf. Recognize and remember that I have given my blood on your behalf. So communion is a recognition of the sacrifice that Jesus makes. Passover, is it a recognition of the sacrifice that Jesus makes? Is it one and the same?
It was pointing forward.
And?
the communion is.
So, as Sam says, Passover is a recognition of coming out of Egypt, of coming out of sin. And Egypt became synonymous with sin. That's what Egypt, I mean, wonderful stereotype, the whole nation for all of the rest of eternity. The Bible says your nation, your name, your group of people is synonymous with sin, and that's what you represent. If I'm an Egyptian, I'm not too pleased.
Well, it's better than being wiped out and wiped off the face of the earth as a people.
Well, that's true. Ed.
Okay, so I got to know what I did in here. So I'm going to go back to Twilight for a second. And it's got me thinking that there's a reason why there's a definite word Twilight, because it's not light nor dark. Okay. So right there, you're at in between. You can't define it, so you give the word Twilight. It's not light, it's not dark. The earth isn't fully lit, it's not fully dark. So that is your Twilight. Okay. And it's not just that movie you used to watch, but it's that, I call it the weird time in the earth when it looks like it's just as light up above, just as light down below on it. Now, saying that, you're saying that the twilight is the festival begin, okay? So at the twilight, it's neither light nor dark. So, I mean, is there something in there? Am I seeing something, or am I just editing?
I don't know. You may well be seeing something. So there are multiple definitions of the word twilight.
Yeah.
Twilight definition number one is our current modern definition. Our current modern definition is basically from when the sun dips below the horizon until we have 5.9 degrees below the horizon, which we can't see. It is approximately 30 minutes afterwards. That's one definition. If you ask a Jew, and you read all of the commentary, which I've read virtually everything, I've read a lot about what the Jews have written on the subject, and twilight is what you can see from when the sun dips below the horizon until you can see three stars in the sky, or the amount of time it takes an average person to walk 3/4 of a mile. Those are a couple of the common definitions. However, if you talk to any Jew who goes back and you ask him to read Exodus 12, verse 6, which uses the word twilight and gives the instruction for Passover, they all say that the word twilight is not what is actually there, but rather between the evenings is the word that should be used. So if you read Exodus 12, 6, they say Passover begins between the evenings. And that is borne out by many different commentators. So, for those of you who know, my theory is that God meant after the sun goes down, God basically moved twilight and moved the sun so that it was down when Jesus left. That's my theory. That way we can have it both ways. Dana has a frown on her head. So my theory is simply this. Remember, when Jesus was on the cross, it was dark. If you take a look at Amos, it tells you that God caused the sun to go down with it. So therefore, it was dark when Jesus died. Sun went down. In fact, we had two sunsets and two sunrises on the 14th day.
Anna had a comment. Go ahead, Anna.
Actually, I had another comment other than what I typed into chat as well, and that is the time of the evening sacrifice was, what, approximately 3 p.m.? Wouldn't it make sense that between the evenings would be between the evening sacrifice and sunset?
Quite possible. But remember, in reality, we need to answer the first question. And the first question is, should we even be doing this?
That's where my first comment that I put in chat came in. And there, you know, we deal with tithes and offerings today. And that's part of the same system that was set up with sacrifices and such. And Paul says, you know, with talking about Jesus' sacrifice, you know, that he therefore there remains no other sacrifice for sin. well, what about first fruits offerings or thank offerings or whatever? Does Jesus replace those as well? Or how do we, like, going back to your question, where do we draw the line with what gets replaced and what doesn't?
Well, obviously, I believe that it is important that the message and the concept that are conveyed by those festivals are important. And the reason I think if we benefit from observing those and honoring those and keeping those is that it develops that relationship with God. It reveals more of God to us. I agree with Mike in that basically, if you take a look at Paul, Paul says, we went from the promise of salvation, which was before Jesus, to the reality. The real sacrifice has arrived. There's no longer a question that Jesus is willing to come to earth and to make the sacrifice. It's a promise fulfilled, it's a promise revealed. It is no longer a question of will. Obviously, Satan put an awful lot of energy and effort into making sure that Jesus never went through with Yahweh, through that sacrifice. But Jesus actually did it. It wasn't just a promise anymore, it was a reality. So what is the message that is trying to be conveyed with that? The same says, it is recognition of coming out of sin. Well, that's something we still need to do today. It's something that each and every one of us, both as individuals and as groups, we still need and want to come out of sin. That's our purpose and our goal. Isn't that what Passover is about?
So, trash this idea. So, your question is it right to honor or observe the festivals? What if your question was, is it wrong to honor the festivals? So, for me, if I were to go out and kill a lamb and sacrifice it on Passover, if I was God, that would upset me. It's like, what? My sacrifice wasn't good enough? Now you're recreating, you know, that. So to me, that's more of the question. It's not, is it right, but are we discounting anything, you know, by observing the festivals other than appreciating that what they were and that they were observed and it was pointing toward the cross in some people's minds, I think. So.
I think it's a very fair question. It's a very important question because obviously some of us in this room think it is wrong to do that. So a couple of things that come to mind when we think about that. One, there are several passages in the Bible which certainly look like they have not happened yet. For example, Isaiah. At the end of Isaiah, we have a discussion about what appears to be a new earth. Or at least a new time in our future. You also find references in Ezekiel. In both of those cases, in Isaiah and Ezekiel, in future instances, it appears that there are going to be sacrifices, again, of live animals. The question is, why? What purpose? It doesn't make any sense that there is a reason for them, and yet there are several passages in the Bible which do indicate those will happen.
Really?
Yeah.
Blasphemy. Where
is that? Yes, Isaiah, Ezekiel, or both. What is it? Isaiah 65 or 66. Those of you online, or those of you with your phones, take a look. I don't remember the exact record. Somebody can help me out.
That's talking about the new earth.
Well, that would be kind of the primary question. What is it talking about?
65:17.
Thank you. Go ahead, read it for us, Sam. Give us a little few verses around it for context. Tell us what the whole Isaiah 65 is about.
You're good. You're good.
Well, it starts out 65 as all people will learn about God. And then the next heading is Israel must be punished. We've all been through that many times. But it goes down to 17 and it's titled The New Time is Coming. I am creating a new heaven and a new earth. The troubles of the past will be forgotten. No one will remember it. People will be happy and rejoice forever and ever because of what I will do. I will make a Jerusalem that is full of joy, and I will make her people happy. Then I will rejoice with Jerusalem. I will be happy with my people. There will never again be crying and sadness in that city. In that city, there will never be a baby who lives only a few days. And every older person will live for a long, long time. A person who lived 100 years will be called young, and whoever doesn't live that long will be considered cursed. In that city, whoever builds a house will live there. Whoever plants a vineyard will eat grapes from that garden. Never again will one person build a house and another person live there. Never again will one person plant a garden and another eat fruit from it. My people will live as long as the trees. My chosen people will get full use of whatever they make. Never again will a woman suffer childbirth and have a baby die. Women will not fear childbirth. I, the Lord, will bless all my people and their children. I will answer them before they call for help. I will help them before they finish asking. Wolves and little lambs will eat together. Lions will eat together like cattle, and the snakes will eat only them. They will not hurt or destroy each other on my own mouth. This is what the Lord is saying.
Thank you. A couple of disturbing words there. One, that there will still be death.
People,
and there will still be a curse. That's rather disturbing. Let's just forget about that chapter. That doesn't matter what we think about. We've got this idea that all stuff will be done. That chapter is kind of a disturbing chapter. But this chapter also talks about
new heaven and new earth.
A new heaven and a new earth. And in that new heaven and a new earth,
new Jerusalem,
there is.
There is death.
So, is it wrong for us to observe? Are we denying Jesus if we do? Are we saying that he didn't actually die on the cross? Are we denying his sacrifice for us? So, let's take a look at the festival, which is also associated with Passover, and that being unleavened bread. What is the concept, and what's the message of unleavened bread? What's it about? With unleavened bread, we're supposed to remove all leaven from the house. We're told explicitly that leaven represents sin. And so that particular festival says we are supposed to remove sin from our lives, and that's what the whole symbology is about. Perfect.
I've never been able to really get it. Is why is leaven represent sin?
It is used specifically for this one example because leaven at the end of the festival is now considered good. So leaven is used both in a positive and a negative way. So yeast and leaven itself is not simple, except it is being used as an example, and it's explicitly being used both ways. So both a good thing and a bad thing. So I think you have to take a look at that in context. But in this context, for this week, leaven is considered to be something bad.
Well, Jesus speaks about the leaven and the Pharisees.
He does.
On the people and their influence. And the way that leavening was done in ancient times was that you knead the dough the night before, put it on the windowsill, and then allow the leavening to come in from the outside to join with your bread.
Sourdough.
Okay.
All right. So leaven is representative of sin in this particular example. That's its purpose. This particular festival says God wants sin to be removed from your life. True or false?
Yes, true.
Is that something that we should not have in our life? Is that done away with? That's what that particular festival is about. Removing sin from our lives.
I think that there's another part of this here that the yeast could probably represent. Ron can attest to the fact that sourdough, if you keep feeding it, can last for a long time. I think the sourdough he got from McKelvey's, and it's an old family one that particular starter has been going on for decades. And part of that, I think, relates to us preparing for and providing for ourselves rather than relying on God. And so I think that this yearly renewing of the leaven, because, you know, they had to restart the process. If they were to have leavened bread, they had to restart the process after this feast or this festival, then it would be relying on God to provide something that would enable them to have bread again.
So what I'm trying to do right now is answer Mike's question by asking the same question in relationship to unleavened bread. In other words, if we were to kill a lamb today, we would be denying that Jesus actually died on our behalf. If we are to remove leaven from our house, we would be denying that God wants us to remove sin from our lives. Is that a fair comparison? In other words, we say we can't do Passover because that would be denying Jesus. Should we also not do unleavened bread because it was done away with, but we're supposed to get rid of sin? We seem to have found Sam's topic. This is good.
Well, this is a little weird, that if the origin of unleavened bread was quickening to leave Egypt, they didn't have time to prepare. Quickening to get out of sin, to repent, to move away from sin and sin in mind.
Right. That was the purpose.
That was it. You know, and then the Jewish traditions piled on all this other stuff. This massive amount, two full sets of dishes in your kitchen because one set could never touch lettuce for the festivals. You know, and all that hokey tradition they built up around it, which Jesus pointed out clearly was the leaven and Pharisees.
True.
It seems to me that, Paul says in 1 Corinthians to celebrate Passover with Christ as the Passover lamb. He takes away the literalness of the festivals, if you will, and applies it symbolically. And so it's no longer a mandated thing to do, but it is symbolic. There's some beautiful pictures in all of the festivals that show us a much better picture of God if we're willing to look. Now, if we want to mandate it, you have to do this, you have to eat the Passover meal just like the Jews do today with the egg and the, you know, all this stuff. I got problems with that. But when you start talking about the symbolism that's there, and you talk about the symbolism pointing back to the sacrifice of Christ, that's just in general of all the feasts, not just specific.
I perfectly and 100% agree. I think that is the excellent way of proceeding. I personally find that I believe that those festivals, when they occur, matter. So I agree with you that I don't need to go out there and kill a lamb. Jesus is my lamb. When I observe Passover, I look to the sacrifice that Jesus did for me. I'm not in any way, shape, or form denying what he did. In fact, I am celebrating it. I'm thankful for it. I am worshiping the God who gave me this sacrifice and this gift. I take a look at that festival and I say, this festival was given to us, number one, as a great sacrifice that God did on our behalf. Number two, God uses those same festivals in multiple ways. He brought the people out of Egypt. He gave a sacrifice on the cross on our behalf. I believe that he also uses those exact same festivals to say, there are events that happen on this day, both historically and in our future. On Passover, on unleavened bread, they are times in which I want you to pay attention to, because I'm going to do some more great miracles on behalf of humanity on this day. And those that are in our future. And I want you to be prepared, and I want you to be ready. That's why it's there. It is in no way, shape, or form denying Christ. Huh?
So take the Passover feast, and what is there about the procedure, the ingredients of it that you think still needs to, that's still pointing to something that might.
For me, it's the time. That, the day. The fact that it happens on the 14th day of the first month of the year. To me, that's the part that I think needs to be done.
So, normally, you know, if you're looking at how do we interpret the scriptures, you know, we search Auntie Ellen's writings, you know, and try to find out. And she goes both ways.
She does.
On this, from what I've read so far, but I kind of like this gentleman's explanation that we can celebrate it. How you celebrate it, literally, philosophically, emotionally, you know, maybe that's what the individual is convicted, you know, of doing. I agree, though, that it appears like the times that are set forth, because that's just not a random on the first day of the 14th done, you know, when the train passes the station at 5:08, you know, it's pretty specific. So I think there, you know, it could relate to, or has related to past time and maybe future times or events where we could be aware or more aware or not deceived or things like that.
Exactly.
So
I think it keeps going. I mean, the Feast of Tabernacles was all about leaving your home to tabernacle with God. I really believe that Jesus was born around the Feast of Tabernacles, not at Christmas time. Agreed, you know. And Jesus says, I'm going there to prepare a tabernacle for you so you can live with God. You know, the fact that Jesus was crucified at least around Passover, whether it was on that day or not, could probably be debated from here to eternity. But probably I could see it, you know. And so they kind of... all the feasts, when you look at the seven major feasts, they play out the plan of salvation for us.
Crazy.
Well, I'm going to say that the feasts are given as a supplement to the Israelites for us until the actual time to be carried out. And so there's something for us to take us from when we have heard and saved to take us back to cross righteousness. And that was the whole feast. Those feasts were part of the process. So, I mean, you can take what you're saying about observing each day and say, well, you should observe every day. And you live the world the same. And all these principles that we learn from the feast, like leaving, you know, unleavened bread, leaving, quickening away from sin as much as you can, getting out of that as soon as you can, and looking to the Lamb for your redeemed in God, and looking down the line, pushing yourself to the tabernacle from your own home to of God. Those are things we should do daily and we should be observing daily. And so, I mean, whether you want to observe the Sabbath, the feast on each day, particularly remember each one, and that's your choice, but I guess there's a difference between observing them to remember versus observing them to fulfill. Does that make sense?
I understand your point, yes. And I will differ from you a little bit in the sense that we use the same argument on the subject of the Sabbath. Does the Sabbath matter? Well, we should be worshiping God each day and every day. We should be setting each day and every day aside. And so the day we worship on isn't special. It's every day. Well, I believe the Sabbath does matter. And I believe that this is a special day. It's a day which God says, I want to meet with you. Yeah, I can meet with you each and every day, but Sabbath is a special day. And I want to do that with you weekly. I think the same thing applies to those festivals. Yes, you are right that the message of God dwelling in us, being with us, the sacrifice he's given to us is universal. It happens with each and every day. But God has said, I am setting aside seven special Sabbaths in addition to the weekly Sabbath that I want you to meet with me. I've got an appointment.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we got Ron all the way.
I think Jesus appears to me to be tired of people empty flag waving about their practical approach to everything. And if it didn't make a practical difference, he was kind of tired of it. So looking at the festivals, sacrifice is still important. The animal sacrifice, I think, was kind of an empty flag waving kind of thing, pointing to something. But he wants us to still sacrifice on behalf of others. And I think if our celebration of the festivals don't include those, we've missed some of the practical aspects of what God wants.
Agreed 100%. Anna?
Every day, I love my husband. But when it comes to our anniversary or his birthday, it's an extra special day. It's not just an everyday relationship with him. He is especially honored. And I think that the same holds true of these festivals. And yes, sacrificing for others, like, you know, being a living sacrifice, as Paul calls us to, is definitely part of it. But I think that instead of day lives, we take time away from our I think that when we were studying the Sabbath, it was called our regular work, and we focus on his work, and it's no longer about anything providing for ourselves or whatever other than just glorifying him and spending time with him.
So I started out with the question. Jennifer and I are going to observe the festival. If you were to join us, what would that mean and what would it look like? Here's what we plan on doing. On the 14th day of the first month, whenever that happens to be, should know within a day. It is likely to be on March 27th. We will choose to simply prepare the next day, which is the Sabbath. We will remember the sacrifice that Jesus made on our behalf. We will thank him for that sacrifice that he made on our behalf. We will rejoice in it. The next day, a Monday, likely, or then a Tuesday, it will likely be a Monday. It's a Sabbath. It's a day on which God says, do no work. It is a day which is the first day of unleavened bread. We will set that day aside as a day which we treat like we do the seventh-day Sabbath. That means we won't go to work that day. Our work is different than most people's, but that means we will choose to set aside our typical activities that we do, we'll do something different, special, that honors God. In the same way we do that on the seventh day Sabbath. We're also supposed, the Jews were told and instructed to remove all leaven from their house for that entire week. The whole city, that's true. It's not just the house, it's the whole community. Now, will we do that? That's kind of funny. We chose to do that last year. Is it a requirement? I think it's no more of a requirement than it is to go kill a lamb. It is something that we can choose to do. I don't think it is a requirement to do it. We chose to do it. And the reason we chose to do it is because by doing the actual practice, it changes your mindset and changes how you see things. We got a blessing from doing these things. So we chose not to have any leaven in the house. That turns out to be a fairly big deal. That is actually not an easy thing to do. Now, here's what's kind of interesting. Milk and eggs are not leaven.
Are you not leaven?
They're used to leaven, they're not leaven. So anyway, there's a whole discussion on that. So in other words, my point is, I don't think that if I had leaven in my mouth, that is good. At the same time, I do think that going through that activity creates a totally different perspective. And it causes a relationship with God to be developed that doesn't exist if you don't do it. I don't think it's wrong for you to not do it. But I do encourage you to try it once, because it does give you a blessing that I know you don't get if you don't try. It's not wrong to do it. If you take a look, Paul says, let no man judge you based on the new moon and the festival. Sometimes we use that as an excuse to say, well, I shouldn't do it. Well, you apply that, and you also say, I shouldn't do the Sabbath, because he uses the same language. I think instead it's saying, if I'm going to observe the Sabbath, if I'm going to observe the festival, if I'm going to get together with my friends on the new moon, you shouldn't judge me. It's okay that I do that. I'm not going to judge you if you don't. It's okay if you don't. But I can tell you this, there is a great blessing if you choose to do it. The process and the activity of going through and removing leaven from your house is an interesting exercise. And you go through and go, why am I doing this? Did I get it all? Now, what's kind of funny is last year, we went through pretty, you know, diligent about removing all the leaven. At the end of the festival, open up a cabinet. I don't think that meant I was a sinner.
Yeah.
I don't think that that meant I was a bad person. But what it did point out to me is that that activity is what God is asking us to take a look at our lives. He said, the leaven itself isn't bad. There's nothing wrong with yeast. In fact, it's a good thing, it's a bad thing. But I'm using it, God says, as a illustration and analogy of what I want you to do with your personal life. I want you to look at your life and say, are you in harmony with the things I want? Be diligent about it. That's the message of the Festival of Unleavened Bread. I don't think that's something we do away with. I think that message applies to us in every generation, in all time. There's one more festival during that week. So in other words, in the first week, in the Passover week of the first month, we have three festivals. We have Passover, we have Unleavened Bread, and we have First Fruits. How do I observe First Fruits? First Fruits is likely to actually fall and match on a Sunday. Easter Sunday is likely to be the same day. So the Gregorian calendar, the Jewish calendar, and the biblical calendar are likely to sync this year. It's likely to be a Sunday. In other words, we'll have two Sabbaths in a row, Seventh-day Sabbath and a Sunday Sabbath. Both will be Sabbaths. Why will it be a Sabbath? It's not because it's First Fruits. First Fruits is not a Sabbath. But the last day of unleavened bread is. Once again, we plan on setting both our Saturday and our Sunday aside as special days in which God says, worship me, respect me, treat me, appreciate the sacrifices I've given. In this particular case, it's the day that Jesus rose from the dead, it's the day he's resurrected. Without the resurrection, there is no salvation. I'm pretty thankful for the sacrifice that he made. And by my remembering that, I am not in any way, shape, or form denying the sacrifice he made. In fact, I honor offering sacrifice. It is the most important sacrifice ever made in the history of humanity. God died on our behalf. He rested in the tomb on our behalf. And he resurrected on our behalf. Those are all great gifts that he gave us. Festivals are asking us to remember those things. I think those are things that are worth doing. So to emphasize, I do not think it is a sin for me to not sacrifice a lamb. I don't think it's a sin for me to have leaven in my house. But the message of what that festival does for us is tremendous. And I believe that you gain a great blessing by going through the exercise. I don't think you need to worry about how perfect you do it. I don't think that's necessary. But I do think if you are diligent in going through your house and removing leaven, it's an interesting exercise that will give you a blessing. I keep repeating myself, but there's a reason. Anyway, I encourage you to think about doing that and consider doing that for the last week of March, then to the first week of April. Take a look at it and think about how you do it, how you do it. What are you going to eat? If you're going to remove all leaven from your house, it's a good idea to consume all the leaven before the day that you're supposed to get rid of it all. Otherwise, the food bank gets too much stuff.
I just want to know if you guys have created this yet.
Have we created a list of what is left? Well, it's amazing how many things yeast has in. But is it, so in other words, it is worth going and taking a look at how the Jews treat the salt. Is bread, which is made with leaven yeast, is it considered leaven after it's been baked? Or is it not? In other words, what is leaven? Leaven is yeast. Yeast is a living organism. It's an organism which can alter and consume sugar. When you bake it, it dies. So, anyway, well, you're supposed to use real heat, you know.
When we're making fruit on the joint, we're using bread that's been baked. And using the leaven that's aggregated out of that already baked bread.
Gotcha. Well, I knew that there was a reason that we did that. I just smelled that experience.
Some of that. So, Jesus moved with that. You guys have to call everyone.
Okay, I can't hear you for some reason.
Just everyone's going to eat rice.
Everyone's just not eating bread.
Yeah, I mean, rice. We all eat rice together.
There we go.
So, like on your arms, it's fermented.
Is it the fermenting or is it the
yeast? I think that's what it means.
So keep in mind, number one, I don't believe that the leaven itself is sin. It is a representation of sin. So whether I have actual leaven in my house isn't a sin thing. That's my point. But going through the exercise of being diligent about choosing to get rid of this is what it's representing with what we're trying to do with our own lives. What we're looking at is, am I a sinner? And what I am doing in my personal life, is it in harmony with what God is asking me to do? We have a list of 49 things that Jesus specifically gives us the instruction to do. Rejoice is one of them. That's one of the instructions I gave. Well, if I'm not rejoicing, if I'm cursing instead, what do I need to do? Do I need to find a way to improve that, to get that out of my life? We know that the relationship with Jesus is what's important to me. There is no one thing that is right or wrong for each and every person. In other words, what is wrong for me might be right or wrong. If what's wrong for Roy might be right for me. It varies from person to person. The point being, what God wants us is to love Him and to love our neighbors, to treat them with respect. As you were saying there during prayer hour, there are a lot of people who simply need God. They simply need to have the love that we all can give. That's what this whole thing points for. That's how Jennifer and I are going to choose to observe the festival. Go tell the land. We're not going to be too worried about whether or not there's leaven in the house, although we are going to worry about it. Not because the leaven's sinful, but because it's an interesting exercise in what it does for me in my life. I'm going to worship God on the first day of unleavened bread, and set it aside as a special day. I'm going to set aside the last day of unleavened bread as a special day because God taught me to do that. I get a blessing from doing what God told me to do. We are a consumed all of our laptops. Thank you, everybody.
Well, I'm going to break. We'll start back up at 11:05.
Thank you. There is a tremendous amount of symbolism in the festival, and it is not being beneficial. As you remember mentioning there, John 1, and word was God, and God came to the tabernacle.